if I don't open it, I don't think they ever come down. I don't think they come down.
Open the Senate Revenue Committee for Tuesday, February 8th. Mr. Vice Chair, we are waiting for one member because the order I'd like to take, Steve Meyer, needs to get back to the other end of the hall. So we'd like to do a work session on 24 first. Senate Bill 25, they're working on amendments to, and that would change a little bit the nature of the bill. So we'll do that when we do another college savings plan bill later. So that will not come up today. We'll do Senate Bill 23 and 28 after we get done with 24 here, but that's all predicated on a third member who may be in their office right now and may hear me. And if they do, we'd sure welcome them down here so we could do a work session on Senate Bill 24. How'd you sleep last night, Senator Starr? Did you
very fast.
Yeah, that's good.
I can make my 1 hour commute after a late committee and rested very well. Thank you.
You know, when it's early in the year, it's dark. I noticed when we left committee last night at about 6:15, 6:30, it's dark. So that, you probably don't get into Hillsboro probably till 7:38.
About 7:30. Yeah.
This could be like one of those morning talk shows. Talk about our night. And well, maybe we'll do 23 and... Is anyone coming? If not, we'll just do Senate Bill 23.
Do you really need to get that out of here?
It's not very
good. Let's see if we... Let's see if we turn up. We'll do about another 30 seconds. Someone's coming. Okay.
Really? Well, I think he probably, his guess is correct. I can't, we'll open a work session as soon as we get a third member here.
Senator George may be sick. He was not feeling well yesterday.
I noticed he sat.
Senator Gordley in the hospital yesterday. Yeah, here in Salem. She's.
You allowed our head investment officer to get coffee, so
excellent.
At least one person.
Excellent. Someone's happy.
It's very happy with your. Open a work session on Senate Bill 24 committee. We've heard this bill before. It's on the Commons Coal Fund. And Mr. Mueller, if you could just refresh us on this bill, and then we'll move on to Senate Bill 21.
Sure. Chair Decker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Mueller, the Assistant Director of Investments for the Oregon State Treasury. Senate Bill 24, as you heard me provide testimony before, would allow for some flexibility in the definition of income for the Common School Fund, thereby giving additional discretion to the state land board to declare earnings in years where we may have essentially it smooths earnings so that we're not constrained by calendar year performance of the fund in terms of realized gains, and we can look at it over a longer term horizon, which is more appropriate for a fund of this nature, in my opinion.
And, Mr. Mueller, there was a little discussion when we had this bill last week. If you care to comment on the discussion that we had, you're welcome to. Or if not, I think we're poised to pass this bill out.
Yeah, I don't have any further comments unless you have any questions for me.
Great. Questions for Mr. Mueller? We're in work session.
Senator Decker, I move Senate Bill 24 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 24 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection to that motion? So ordered. Senator Brzezinski, would you be willing and interested in carrying that bill?
And hopefully able to. No, I will do that.
I never question able. Willing and interested is the open a work session. Thank you very much, Steve. Open a work session on Senate Bill 21. That's exactly what I did. I'm closing that one, and now we're opening a work session on Senate Bill 21.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just for your information, this is the 30th day of the session, as well as Fat Tuesday.
And how are we doing?
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, out of my bills, you haven't passed one yet.
Here we go.
Senate Bill 21, we've heard this one, and it... It talks about the prohibition on the investment in foreign securities for the funds, the short-term funds that the state treasurer controls. And those, as you remember from the testimony last time, were the funds that are dollar-denominated investment of a high grade. And it allows, as the treasurer have testified, more flexibility in managing the funds. Last time in the SMS, you'll find some of the issues that were discussed and the questions that were asked. And again, we have not seen a revenue impact or a fiscal impact out of this bill.
Committee Mazin has not been to the floor yet because a bill of his has not been passed out of this committee. And Mardi Gras is what, tomorrow?
Today.
Today's Mardi Gras.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
And if we don't get a bill out, I can't celebrate.
That's true. So the pressure's on us to get a bill out.
Chair Deckard. I move Senate Bill 21 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 21 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I forgot my Mardi Gras beads, but I'm going to support this one.
Without that, well, one good benefit early today is we've allowed Mr. Schmidt free time to get his coffee. And
apparently I didn't need it then.
Exactly. I thought we would use your expertise. Any further discussion on the merits of the bill or Mardi Gras? any objection to the Senator Starr's motion? So ordered. And Senator Starr, would you like to have Mazin?
Delighted.
Great. Senate Bill 21 passes and close the work session on Senate Bill 21. Thank you. 2 for 3 on Treasury bills.
We'll work on that last one.
On the third one. Thank you. So now we are going to, the order we'll do is we'll do Senate Bill 23 and then 25 we're going to hold off on for a week or two here, and then we'll have a public hearing on Senate Bill 28.
And you have 28.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 23. Mr. Malik.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 23, as you could see, is a very light reading bill with only few pages. 26 to be exact. A lot of the changes that Senate bill attempts to do are technical in nature, but probably not all of them, and it does with procedures for issuing, selling, and maintaining bonds and issues and so on. A lot of the housekeeping that is proposed, and this bill comes to us from the via the state treasurer, but to the Oregon Municipal Debt Advisory Commission, and it tries to allow some enabling language or clarifying language and updates what the authority and rulemaking authority for the Management Advisory Council, those things are talked or were talked about in the previous session, the 2003, but it seems like the language in the law was not as clear or as clean as they might have wanted to. Now, the other issue that this might look into is the limit on tax bonds for the counties, those tax bonds that are to finance the pension bonds, and set a limit of a 5% versus a 1% limit previously set the statutes, and try to clarify that issue in that way. And that issue is probably still, to me at least, not clear. I tried to look whether there are any counties that would be bumping against this limit, or if there's any issues with this limit for different counties. And I have not been able to ascertain that yet. And that's one change that the bill does. This change also is the subject of Senate Bill 28 as well. But in Senate Bill 23, it comes back in. The requirements for bond sale and bond sale technology and mailing and 10 days of destination and the preliminary statement is also changed to live up to the age of electronic delivery and so on. So those are being updated. And then one also of the changes is allowing the different type of governments, mainly COGS, Council of Governments, to be seen in the same light or go under the same laws that the municipality operates under, in order to allow them for those structures of rules. Some of the language that I, as you would see in page 2, line 41, you have C says, note authorized under this subsection, the old language says shall mature not later than 1 year. You would see how it is much easier to say may not mature. So some of these were a little easier reading, others were grammatical, others and changes.
Maybe we had an extremely young legislative council that wrote, you know, that's the vernacular now, is to put the not last. But perhaps we had a 13 or 14-year-old who wrote those. No one's getting my joke here, so we'll just let you continue. Right.
It's a very good one, Mr. Chair. But it shall mature not. That's probably, I'm not going to go into the bill section by section. I'll leave that to testimony, since they have, as we get, section by section analysis on it. And as I mentioned before, there are a number of amendments proposed for this bill, and we have not seen the amendments in the formal legal language out of council yet.
Thank you very much. Mr. Clancy, Mr. Rogers.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Clancy. I'm the chair of the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. Municipal Debt Advisory Commission is a commission made up of 7 members appointed by the governor. 4 of the members are representing local governments, cities, counties, special districts, and school districts, respectively. 2 members are appointed from the public, and 1 member is the deputy state treasurer. The Municipal Debt Advisory Commission is charged with overseeing the municipal debt issuance process in the state, keeping track of how things are going, and preparing for you a bill every 2 years to address issues of concern to the municipal debt community. We go through a process about 6 months before your session where we hold public hearings, solicit input from local governments, from those who work with local governments about what sorts of issues have arisen, what sorts of changes might be good to make in the laws, and what sorts of changes are necessary due to misinterpretations or changes that have been made in the past. And go through that process, prepare a bill, take a look at it, vote on which parts to include in the bill, send that to bond councils who then draft a bill for legislative council, look at it one more time, send it off to legislative council, who then redrafts the bill and sends it to you. Last session, we brought to you a bill that made a number of technical amendments and one substantive amendment, which had to do with interest rate exchange agreements, referred to often as swaps. Our bill this year addresses a number of technical amendments to prior legislation. Also addresses a few technical amendments to that swap legislation, as we found that it wasn't perfect in the way it was drafted to you. Along with me today is Harvey Rogers, who worked closely with the commission in terms of drafting those sections and is better able than I to walk through the bill that we prepared as it was redrafted by legislative council. And so we're both here to answer any questions that you've got about the various sections, but Harvey will walk you through section by section.
Great. Mr. Rogers.
Chair Decker, members of the committee, my name is Harvey Rogers. I'm a partner in the law firm of Preston Gates and Ellis, and we are fortunate to serve as bond counsel to a variety of state agencies and a large number of local governments in Oregon. I'm going to try and do a difficult thing this morning, which is walk through this very technical bill and tell you what you want to know and not bore you excessively with stuff that you don't. If I'm not doing a good job of that, if one of you would throw a gavel at me, I'll try and either give you more detail or give you less as you desire.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Already.
We who worked on this with it all believe that these are clarifying changes that are intended to do what folks wanted to do with these statutes originally, with a couple of exceptions. The 2 exceptions are the interest rate swap provisions. Those were first adopted last legislative session. They are complicated provisions, and those of us who offered those provisions to the legislature didn't do it quite right, and now we've got a couple of years of experience doing those transactions, and we have what we think are some improvements. And at the end, I'll discuss an amendment that is not currently before you that we think is fixing a mistake in the law. So it is certainly substantive. If, with your permission, I'll just walk through the bill section by section and talk about what it does.
Sure, and as rapidly as you want to move, and we'll if it's okay with you, we'll jump in if on the off chance we have a question.
That would be wonderful.
Senator Brzezinski.
I guess the only other clarification is if there's an area that there seems to be, let's say, difference of opinions by different institute groups that you know of, maybe pointing that out to us. It seems to me these type of bills are the ones that, you know, we're relying on you and your certified smarts as to what we need to be doing compared to what we know. And so my philosophy is I'm going to follow your lead, but I'd like to know if we have some issues that we need to maybe flesh out a little bit more than that. Like the chair said and the council said, I mean, at this point we're talking about technical fixes.
Just to address that process, we do go for several months, hold a couple of hearings in the MDAC. We don't bring to you anything that there isn't internal agreement between the various governments, bond councils, and financial advisors as to the merits of those things. And so we vet out in that process things that folks can't agree on. And what you have here is the things that folks agree on, and although some of them are changes to law in addition to the technical amendments.
Right, and I guess I wanted to bring that up. Thank you for putting that on the record, because there is a lot of processing that occurs before you appear before us. And I think that for myself, I'm pretty comfortable relying on that process to get the stuff that we need to deal with. But there is some consensus.
If you could highlight for us, that's a good point, if you could highlight just any areas that you think, if you were seated in our chairs, you would want or we would want to be aware of in a 26-page bill.
Well, then, with the chair's permission, I'll try and do that. I'll try and tell you about the things I would want to know if I were sitting in your spot.
Thank you.
The first is the issue that I believe your staff alluded to about adjustment of a couple of debt limits and whether that is a substantive issue. And I'll give you the background on that. Oregon counties, like the state of Oregon, have a constitutional debt limit. They cannot incur a debt in excess of $5,000 unless it's pursuant to a legislative authorization to issue bonds. If without that legislative authorization, they can nevertheless borrow money, because debt has a technical meaning, but they need to borrow money doing it what's called subject to appropriation. That means they borrow the money, but they only have to pay it back if their governing body appropriates each year an amount of money to pay the debt back. This is actually how the state of Oregon borrows through its certificate of participation program. It's a certificate of, it's a subject to appropriation program because there's a state debt limit. Now, as you might expect, if a county borrows money and they don't really promise to pay it back, the lenders charge them a higher interest rate than they would if they really promised to pay it back. So about four sessions ago, the legislature authorized what are called limited tax bonded indebtedness. They described a category of indebtedness that counties could incur where they really promised to pay it back, and that allows counties to get a lower interest rate. The time the legislature did that, it authorized indebtedness of that kind up to 1% of the real market value of property in the county. Near as we can tell, that was a really good thing. Counties switched over to doing that instead of subject to appropriation indebtedness, and it saved them some fair bit of money borrowing in the public marketplace. About two sessions ago, folks became aware of the growing unfunded actuarial liability that governments have to the Oregon Public Employees Retirement System. And to facilitate governments borrowing at relatively low interest rates to pay down their unfunded PERS liability, the legislature went in and adopted special statutes that authorized counties to incur the same kind of indebtedness that that first bill did, but for pension liabilities. And they authorized the pension liabilities bonds to be up to 5% of the value of the county. The language that's in Senate Bill 28, and it's also, interestingly enough, in Senate Bill 23, is just an effort to say that the 1%, the older statute, is dealing with general borrowings that are not pension borrowings. So the counties can only do up to 1% for general purposes, and that the 5% that is authorized for pension borrowings is a separate authorization. So if you borrow under the 1% statute for non-pension purposes, that doesn't count against the 5% that you borrow for pension purposes. And if you borrow under the 5%, it doesn't count against the 1%. We believe that that was the legislative intention. It just never got connected that way. Your staff has indicated we are not sure that anybody is over the limit or right up against it. But if they are, they would be up against the 1% limit because, as a practical matter, people's unfunded actuarial liabilities have been pretty large and their general borrowing needs have been low. So that's what the statute has done. The amendments are trying to do is to say that first statute stands by itself, doesn't interact with the pension borrowing statute. The pension borrowing statute stands by itself, doesn't interact with the first statute.
Do all these statutes, do they govern all the debt instruments that a municipality would have, revenue bonds, all?
It's, Chair Decker, members of the committee, it's an excellent question, and the short answer is no. The Oregon governments have a large variety of borrowing tools that are available to them. Some of them are particular to individual governments, and some of them are generally available to local governments or generally available to local governments into the state of Oregon. The Oregon Municipal Debt Advisory Commission has requested that the Oregon Law Commission to undertake a synthesis and rewrite of the government borrowing statutes, and they are planning on undertaking that for presentation to you at the next legislative session. And then you'll, when you see that, you will get a much better picture of how it all works. This particular section of these bills that I was talking about only relates to county borrowings where a county is, we call it pledging their full faith and credit, committing their general tax revenues. And it doesn't affect anybody else but counties. So that's the first of the two things that I would sort of want to know about. Would they say we think of it as just making clear what people intended, but it could look to somebody else like we're, you know, opening up an avenue for people to borrow money or what's going on. Which, mm-hmm. Again, we don't think that. With your permission, I'll move to what I think is the second issue,
please.
Which is even more difficult because it's not before you at all. And we believe it will appear in an amendment, and it also takes a bit of explaining. As you're probably aware, local governments have a fiscal year that begins on July 1 and ends on the next June 30th, and they budget for that fiscal year. Many local governments collect property taxes. The property taxes they get only come in late in November. So if you imagine them trying to live their life, they sort of have to live off stored resources from the beginning of the fiscal year until about December 1st when the taxes turn over, and then they have the tax money that they get for the whole year that comes in halfway through the year. So they have a bit of a cash flow issue. Many local governments have issued what are called general obligation bonds. General obligation bonds for Oregon local governments are different than they are for the state because these days they can only be issued with double majority voter approval. But when they're issued, they are accompanied by the ability to levy a special additional property tax that is dedicated to the bonds and is sufficient to pay the bonds. So that tax makes those bonds the most secure kind of borrowing, lowest interest rate kind of borrowing that a government can do. But it's quite heavily limited by the Constitution, and as I say, it requires a double majority vote to do. Well, you will see an amendment that is trying to deal with the cash flow issues that are associated with these bonds. A government will issue these bonds, and they'll have a couple of the classic bond has two payments due each year. They pay two interest payments and one principal payment. And a government with outstanding bonds will have those two payments due. Well, a lot of them, it's very hard to schedule those payments so that you're sure that the property tax money will get in time to make those payments. And as far back as any of us can remember, what governments have done is they will levy what they need to pay on the bonds after the taxes come in and until the next set of taxes come in. So they will levy, for example, if they had bond payments due in October and April, they would levy for the October payment. Now, they wouldn't get... They can't get the money in time to pay the October payment because the money doesn't come in until December. So they will levy for the April payment of this fiscal year, and they'll levy for the October payment of the next fiscal year. Okay, so they're levying on their levy year rather than on their fiscal year. And that's gone on forever, as near as we can tell. A couple of sessions ago, somebody was doing legislative cleanup, and they changed the levy statute. And it ended up saying that they can only levy for the payments that are due in the fiscal year of the levy. And I think it was somebody who just didn't understand the cash flow problem and thought it was a sensible change, but the second that changed, I didn't know about it. I do this for a living, and one of my clients brought it to our attention, and we all said, whoa! So you will see an amendment to address that, and that is clearly substantive. We think it's fixing something that really needs to be fixed and is not burdensome to anyone, but that amendment's not there. The other thing that the amendment will do is it will, we believe, attempt to address a problem that you may have heard about that Marion County is experiencing. Marion County had a significant property tax appeal that went on for a number of years. It was a centrally assessed property. The appeal was actually handled by Department of Revenue. And the property tax appeal was successful. Because the appeal's gone on for a long period of time, Marion County now has to refund a whopping amount of money. And the way the law works, that refund comes out of what are called the unsegregated tax collections. So Marion County's got some taxes that it would distribute in February to all of the local governments inside Marion County. They're going to have to take that refund out of that distribution, or they can pay it in installments to the property owner who had the appeal, but they pay interest at, I think it's 12%, which is a colossally high interest rate in these times. So they're going to make the refund to the property owner. What that means is that everybody's tax receipts for this turnover will be short by the amount of this large refund. And the refund, I think, is like a third of the total taxes. Some of those taxes are going to pay general obligation bonds. So the amendment you will see will say that if a government doesn't get the taxes in to pay the bonds that it levied, and it has to use its own money to pay those bonds, then next year it can levy to get back the money it spent on those bonds. And I'm sorry that was a long go-through, but it's dealing with this very awkward fact that the taxes come in December and the fiscal year begins in July.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzezinski.
I want to go back to that one point about the 12% that's paid back out. I had a constituent that brought that to my attention, and if I remember correctly, he talked about where, I guess, someone may overpay their taxes. It sits there, and then they basically get back and somehow get interest out of it.
Oh, interest.
And what I'm wondering is, why are we at 12% when I go to the bank and knowing how much it costs me to get money and how much I make on my deposits? Has that ever been discussed as to having some type of variable?
Yeah. We did. I mean, we spent, I would say, a week on this at least last session. Madison, I don't know if you want to give a quick synopsis of it. It was certainly an issue that was discussed in terms of both on the plus side and the minus side for both the taxpayer and for the county. Mr. Malachy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Brzezinski, I think the arrangements for the counties have looked at the different issues with this. Now, on the other side, the late payments from the taxpayer is 16%.
Oh.
So the spread comes to be.
Yeah. Worked both ways.
Yeah.
What did we look
Sounds
at?
Like this was the punishment.
We looked at, Mr. Chair, changing the 16% and bringing it down. And for that, however, in essence, funds a special program, which is a county assessor's, or the assessment fund, as it's called. And if I'm rusty, I think we have. Here, John Phillips from Department of Revenue, who could speak a lot on this issue, although I don't think you probably talk about it too much. And
I think he's explained enough.
If you want a work group, I'll gladly assign a work group on that.
Sounds like someone's been there and done that.
That's the short. other questions or comments for Mr. Clancy or Mr. Rogers? We do actually really appreciate the hitting of the two areas and doing it in a manner that is easily digestible for us and understandable.
With the chair's permission, we have two other things that we...
One, I just wanted to touch base with you here. Be quick.
Do we have other bills, Mr. Chair? We have another.
The reason this last piece is coming to you as amendment rather than was part of the original bill, I just wanted to explain that that came up after we'd finished our normal process several months ago as folks were getting ready to prepare property tax levies this year and found someone finally read the law and found that problem and called us and said, is there any way we could attach this amendment to your bill because it's a major problem? The commission had a quick parlay via email, then a phone call vote on it to add it to the... So I apologize. We try not to bring these pieces as amendments to you. The rest of the amendments coming to you are very technical changes in terms of the language that legislative council used that... just needed to be tweaked in order to be consistent with what the intent of the law was. And then there was one more piece that I thought that perhaps you should know about that Harvey didn't mention, and I just wanted him to address that one too.
And if you have I'm looking for the composition of your commission, and I'm sure it's in here somewhere, but if we don't have it, we should have who are those seven members.
Okay, thank you. We'll get that to you.
And then the last issue is that I mentioned that last legislative session, the legislature authorized local governments in the state of Oregon to enter into interest rate swaps. It's a new technique, and it's complicated. And the legislation listed a bunch of thou shalt and thou shalt nots about them. And some of those have proved not to be perfect. So we are deleting or changing a couple of the thou shalt nots and substituting regulatory power at the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission, trying to learn from our experience that we can't predict perfectly what's going on.
Great. Other questions? Thank you. Committee, Senator Courtney usually carries, it's tradition that we started last time, that he carries the MDAC bills, and so we're not in work session yet, but we'd like to continue that tradition of having him carry the Senate President all MDAC legislation. Just close the public hearing. Oh, no, we have Ms. Deister would like to testify.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. I'm here to admit that I am the cause of said amendment that is not yet out of council, but wanted to let you know that we definitely do support the concept behind the amendments that Harvey was talking about. And I'm obviously leaving it to bigger brains than mine to come up with the exact language that will accomplish what it is that we're looking for. But we're definitely in support of that and wanted that to be on the record. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Deister. Do you know the situation that drove these amendments? They mentioned the county was looking at a levy, called them and said the statutes don't mirror what we're...
It's my understanding that this sort of bubbled up through the Oregon Municipal Finance Officers Association. I can't name the particular county or the municipality that identified this particular issue, but that's how I became involved, is they called me and said, hey, can we get a bill? Can we get this fixed? So.
Great. Questions or comments for... Thank you. Appreciate it. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 23. And just if folks were worried that we're not going to get enough from the Oregon Municipal Debt Advisory Commission, we have another bill, which is Senate Bill 28, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 28. Mr. Malik?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 28, I think, localizes the issue of the two identified debt limit on the limited tax bonds, and tries to spell out the differences between the previous 1% ceiling and this new ceiling that is particular only to the pension bonds, and allowing that to be at 5% and not inclusive or part of that previous 1%. That's why you find it only to be one page facing back, and it tries to say, regardless of what accepted us, except as provided otherwise in this section, it seems like that was in the old statute enough room for confusion between the two limits, and perhaps if Senate Bill 28 on its own, or it becomes folded in Senate Bill 23, the issue somehow needs to be clarified. It doesn't have any other issues except the ones that we've tried to look at, if anybody's bumping or getting below, how is it affecting the counties. Although we've heard that it might not be the case at all, it's in the other direction, but I've not been able to ascertain that again.
Thank you. Mr. Clancy and Mr. Rogers. The fun keeps coming.
Thank you. Pat Clancy, Chair of the Municipal Advisory Commission. I have nothing additional to add other than what we talked about before to this bill.
Harvey Rogers, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 28, the provisions were apparently separated and put into that bill on the theory that they might be controversial. There are identical provisions in Senate Bill 23. With some minor language glitches for which we have submitted suggested amendments to legislative counsel. I think from our perspective, we only need it once, and we would be happy to have it either place. If you believe it's troubling, we certainly wouldn't want its provisions to jeopardize the rest of Senate Bill 23, but we believe it's not controversial.
And your commission, 7-0. You only bring things that...
Yes, 7-0.
Agree. Well, committee, my preference would be obviously just to put it, you're having it drafted as amendment, as part of your overall amendment to 23. Questions or comments? Senator Starr.
My preference would be to... allowed to move in 23 and to just drop this measure from consideration.
I agree.
Mr. Chair, there is one problem with that. If we do that, that means the President only has to carry one bill.
Yeah, that is
true.
Will
he be sad if we do that?
The legislative director is kind of moving ominously behind us. We'd like him to carry... One, the tradition is he carries one big omnibus MDAC bill. It's only a two-year tradition. I'm open, I guess, but the vice chair has voiced his. I mean, I'm sure we'll have lots of questions on the floor about the ins and outs of Pass the bill.
That might be one question just in itself. Why one versus two?
Exactly. That's actually very good thinking. Great. Anything further? Appreciate all the time and energy and the work, as Senator Przanski said, that y'all provide for us in terms of getting these tougher questions ready for us, and having a 7-person commission vote unanimously on all of them gives us a great deal of confidence, obviously.
Agreed. Very welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Happy Mardi Gras. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 28, and I think that's the last you'll see of that bill, and we'll look to bring this back as Senate Bill 23. Tomorrow we have, what do we have? We have the white paper from Commissioner Beyer and his staff on a question we've been asking about for 2 years, just the way we tax regulated utilities. And then Thursday we'll do two bills. One is the Damascus bill, and then Senate Bill 283 will join that on Thursday, and that will be our week. We are adjourned.